Dad Bod Rap Pod. My name is Nate LeBlanc. I'm the producer and co-host of DBRP. Big shouts to Dave and Damone, giving me the space to do another solo episode this week. We've got a very special episode, and there's a little bit of a story behind it that I want to get into before we get to our really awesome exclusive interview that we're bringing you this week. So this all started back in January. We did an episode of the podcast. It was in the low 50s. It was near the beginning of this year. And it was number 54. And Damone, Dave, and I were reacting to the release of a list that ranked rappers by their number of unique words that they use in their rhyme schemes. And we kind of had a moment where Aesop Rock was the highest ranked rapper, and we were like, what about Milo? Milo uses unique words. Actually, let me just play you a little clip of it real quick.
We're coming into an era, and I think Milo is a perfect example, where people are marrying the flyness with meaning and structure.
And I think you can't talk about Milo's rapping for very long without using the term poetry.
Okay,
like it's poetic. Yeah. You know, yeah. I think like I don't know if you would say this or not. And Rory, if you're listening, we'd love to talk to you. And the craziest thing happened. A friend of the program, he on social media, he goes by Hip Hop Is Alive FM, heard the episode and was like, you know, sent it to Milo, who now goes by the rap alias Rap Ferreira, and he listened to it, and a couple of months later he hit us out of the blue on Twitter, and he was like, hey, I heard that episode and I want to be on the podcast. And I was like blown away. We talk about it a little bit in the interview, and so it took some arranging and it took him going on tour in San Francisco, but we were able to put this together, and I'm extremely pleased about it. Dad Bod Rap Pod, I'm here with Rap Ferreira.
Peace.
Just so happy that we're doing this, that it actually came together over Twitter DM.
Yep.
Oh, shit, you're not recording. Or can you lean in a little?
Check one, two.
Okay, that's great. Thank you.
Banging.
Yeah, man. So I've always wanted to start an interview this way. I haven't felt like I had the right interlocutor to ask kind of a ponderous question, but I want to lead off by asking you why you rap.
I love that. Thanks, man. I rap, let's get to the essence. I rap fundamentally for my freedom. Yeah, I rap for my freedom. I'm rapping to guarantee my son's freedom. Fundamentally, that's why I'm doing it. I enjoy art. I like art. All of that is true. But really, it's the only thing I could do to operate how I need to operate.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. I think there's a couple ways this could have gone. Like, I really could have taken an hour of your time to pick apart lyrics and just ask you what they mean, but I don't want to do that. I think what is so interesting about your style, and I do want to find out if it's kind of more free-flow ting or if it's written, and I do want to talk a little bit about process, but I think the other main kind of ponderous thing that I want to ask you is, is it coming from you or through you?
Oh, always through, man.
Okay.
Yeah, all props do. It's always through, man. I consider myself like a radio. You know, oftentimes I'm just dialing it in and then letting it come.
I think one of the reasons that I asked that, I listened to a lot of your music today. Like, I wanted to be respectful and do research, and I listened to it a lot anyway, but I wanted to, like, just kind of spend the day swimming in it. And you're welcome. Thank you for doing it. It's just, I'll just dispense with the kind of, you're one of the most vital MCs working today. Your art means a lot to me. And I think that because you're one of the most interesting rappers, therefore you're one of the most interesting people who are just kind of practicing the art form today. And I think your journey has been kind of fascinating, and I'd love to like hear it from you. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think the point that I want to try to make up front here is, it's really dense with allusions. And I guess I'm wondering, like, are you always reading? Are you always listening? Are you like a scrap of paper guy? Are you a notebook guy? Like, how are you collating all of this information? And like, how do you decide which verse, which song? Like, can you talk a little bit about that?
I can, for sure. Thank you. I'd say it used to be a scrap of paper, cat. And I mean, even now I keep a little notebook on me. But yeah, I'm listening. Rapping is about being a good listener, hearing those curious little turns of phrases. Earlier you said an audio patina, right? Bang, you already know that's in my treasure chest now. Like, yeah, I'm just open. I hear stuff and I like it. I'm not reading all the time. I'm reading right now because, you know, I'm away from the kid on the road and time is mine again. So it's easy to dive into something. But no, I'm not reading as much as I used to be, man. I don't know. I guess I write. I usually write in like isolation at the shop at Soul Folks now. And I kind of, I got to a place where I need the beat to be really loud so I can't even hear my own voice, but I need to be able to rap it. I need to be able to rap it out loud, maybe move around, but not hear my own voice, just hear the beat. And that's how I've been writing lately.
That's great. I think let's talk a little bit about your physical journey. You're from somewhere, and then you began your career in L.A.
That's tight.
And then you moved to Maine, right? Is that the basics of it?
That's the basics of it.
Okay. Where are you from?
I was born in Chicago. My family's from Chicago. I'm originally from Chicago.
Okay.
At a young age, my parents divorced, and then some years after that, I had moved to Maine with my dad.
Gotcha.
And I lived there for a while, New Hampshire.
Where else?
Massachusetts, Wisconsin. Moved around a lot.
Sure.
Did college in Wisconsin. Dropped out, moved back to Chicago. At this point, I was signed to Hellfire Club.
Uh-huh. It's a bus driver, Mike Eagle. No can do. Yes, no. Correct me if I'm wrong.
That pause was only because I was drinking water. It wasn't because I was entertaining the question. No. Hellfire Club was started by James McCall. No can do. So it's really his label, his crew.
Okay.
Mike Eagle's in it. Bus driver's in it. William Thedford the fourth. Kale. Verbs, Rhetoric Ramirez. I don't think I'm forgetting nobody.
Okay. A powerful group of wordsmiths.
Yeah, so I was at like 21, and I was in this crew, and they're all in L.A., and I'm in Chicago, so I packed my shit up and moved to L.A.
How did you establish a connection? Was this like mailing CDs or like early internet? How did that come to be?
Mike Eagle is originally from Chicago. And him and my uncle pledged the same fraternity. So my uncle's an MC from Chicago as well, called Nizam.
Okay.
So I've always kind of known him, Mike Eagle, from a young age, like probably 8 or 9. Before he was like a famous MC, like I used to talk to him on MySpace.
Okay.
And be like, man, I really like your stuff. He had a record called Hot Oven Bust Down.
Okay.
No. That was a song off of... The Booger Finger. That was the name of the record. Mike Eagle had a record called The Booger Finger. I have a copy if anybody wants to. yeah, this amazing record. And he had all these wild songs on there, and I just loved his style. So I would send him rhymes and be in touch with him. And he was kind of like my OG internet homie.
That's cool. We had him on by the time this airs, it'll be about 3-4 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Just like impeccable podcast guest.
That's what's up.
Yeah, he just like he gets how to like get to deeper things without taking himself too seriously, and is like a great practitioner of the art. And we want to talk about his TV show and all that. But you know,
I miss writing with him because of those qualities.
Yeah,
I miss being in the same room working on raps with him, like for Hellfire, and just being around a cat that smart and funny, and how he's able to code his thoughts. Because like, you know, being in a writer's room with a cat, you really see how they think and then prepare thoughts for consumption. And Mike really hit me to like, yo, you got a lot of great ideas, but you just be lobbing them. And you know, like put some coating on that shit, make it a speedball, make it a whatever, you know?
Right. When I think of kind of getting at universal truths in a coded way, but still in a classic hip hop format, I always think of the earliest De La Soul. Mm-hmm. Like nothing is ever quite dead on. It's always like a view askance, and they're always coming at it from a slightly different angle. And having like kind of, like I said, swam in so much of your lyrics today, I think I'm going to posit something, and I just want you to tell me if you think it's true. Do you think anyone could get 100% of what you're talking about?
I love that question. No. No, and I write it, and I'll be cackling to myself like, no one could ever get this.
Yeah. There's probably something to like the sleuthing. Like, you know, like kids, like, I'll just take myself as an example. Like, if I really want to truly understand someone's verse, I'll rewrite it by hand. And so I think you have the kind of lyrics that reward that kind of investment. So if you take it and you try to we're not talking like grammatically diagramming sentences. I'm just trying like what's the illusion? And I mean with an A, and occasionally with an I, right?
Yeah.
And and like what is the essence of what he's trying to say? And I really don't think I could possibly get it, but I think there's little nuggets in there that you dig out and you like, okay, I got that one. Like just to maybe for the last time reference Mike Eagle, you have a line on Who Told You to Think where you say, I remember the museum where Mike Eagle learned about Dubuffet.
I do.
And I happen to be a Dubuffet aficionado, like Art Brut and his whole like kind of lowering of the standard of the kind of ivory tower take on the Western art canon is like extremely important work that needs to be discussed. But I think it's fair to say very rarely in rap lyrics is it discussed.
Oh, wow.
So I think there's a lot there is Thanks, basically man. What I'm trying to say. And I realized that wasn't a question.
No. It's cool. I do remember that day, though. It was we were in Des Moines, Iowa at the art museum. They had a Dubuffet. And we went there and saw it. And I remember the look on Mike's face. And I remember Mike writes in notebooks still with like spiral bound.
Okay.
And like wears like a big ass backpack with his notebooks and like, I remember him sitting in the lobby and writing and looking at him and just being like, man, this is my favorite MC and I'm on tour with him. How cool is this? And we're at the art museum. Fast forward a couple of years and hearing that song and being like, wow, I watched him do this.
Yeah.
You know, like that. And to be a part of that and at the same time a rapper, it's impossible not to like code it in a rhyme.
Sure. Yeah. Totally. So let's talk a little bit about L.A. Like, you moved around a lot when you were younger. You got to L.A. You stayed for a while. Like, what do you like about it? What don't you like about it? And kind of within a hip-hop frame, but as a person.
I love L.A. It's super fly. It's just a place where it's so fly. And it's like, if you're not fly, that's a penalty, you know?
Yeah.
You're, like, penalized for having nothing there. Kind of hard. So I, being an artist who has nothing, was just like, damn, I keep getting penalized here, but I like it, you know? I love being able to be a part of rap for real. You know, like, you do a show in L.A. and you're like, man, that occurred within the realms of rap. You know, when I do a show in Biddeford, it's like, so we're fucking around. This is just some fun.
Right.
And both are cool, but, you know, it's cool to come to a place and know it's for keeps.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about Project Blowed and the kind of legacy. And again, I'll just posit something. You tell me if you think it's true. Hellfire Club and the kind of that generation, your generation. You mentioned off mic earlier, you felt like you were a little too young to really be a part of it when it was at its most vital, but that you're a descendant of it.
Definitely.
A descendant of what?
A descendant of the tradition that occurred at the Good Life Cafe, Project Blowed, what is now Bananas, you know, all that shit, that Leimert Park, that black jazz poet shit, like that whole tradition from Micah Nine down through, you know, Jupe and Mike Eagle and No Can Do and Bus and all these cats, and how free their minds operate and their tone operates, their melody, how it comes together, the instrumentation. You know, the emphasis on freedom,
mm-hmm.
you know, all of that. I consider myself a descendant of that. I'm not from LA, so that would really be the primary reason why it'd be difficult to be like, yeah, I'm a Blodian, because I wasn't at them things.
Right.
But my whole life I knew about that. As soon as I was big enough, grown enough to do it, rap put me on a plane to LA to be there, to go to the Lemert, to stand on them corners, to freestyle with Micah Nine and Jupe and Bus and Ab Rude, and, you know, to really do all that felt like such a major initiation to me. And at the time, too, we had Low End Theory, you know. So there was another thing going on that seemed like sort of a child of the Blowed.
You know, is it fair enough to say that kind of what was happening in lyrics at the Blowed was happening in beats at Low End Theory? Like that just exploration?
I don't want to say that.
Okay.
I mean, that'd be fly, but I'm not the one to say it, sure. You know. The shit that was happening at Low End in my lifetime, I'm only just now starting to appreciate what I was able to see there. For real, like, dog, Prince went to Low End Theory. Like,
that's
what?
Crazy. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
What?
Yeah.
That's like, that blows my mind that there was this place in this time and that everybody converged there to make their art and do their art, and we could talk shop and shit. And it was so cool at the time, but now that it's gone, especially, there's nothing really like that. I recognize how culture decays, you know, in the ways that it does, and it's spooky to see.
Yeah. So I have kind of a pet theory that I work under, and I'm explored it in a couple of these different podcast things and some of the things that I've written. And it's that the essence of like LA style, Project Blowed style, Good Life style, underground hip hop is that it's anchored by kind of a tribal primal drum, like not mm-hmm. really crazy drum programming. It's like it's just kind of like on a rhythm, and then it's the lyrics where you like you go to space, like you take flight, you explore the outer realm, like that's what's beautiful about that style of rapping. And then it's kind of codified in the chop, which is like that's their kind of house style. And it's not that everyone uses it, but it's like if you hear like a CVE tape, then you
that's
know that they're from that place at that time. It's their style of rap, and I think it's very, very underappreciated in the kind of evolution of rap. And it now it's, I don't know, like it could easily be forgotten, but then there's things like documentaries or people like yourself carrying on the traditions that try to keep it at the forefront, perhaps.
Definitely I'm trying to keep it at the forefront. It's interesting, all that stuff you said about the beat and whatnot. I think it's anchored in a history. The LA scene, hip-hop scene, is anchored in a history. For whatever reason, Lemert Park and that area is a natural capsule of black identity. And so these things are seamlessly passed down, while in other places maybe it was a little more blurred or foggy how hip-hop is jazz, you know.
Sure.
And I think that connection to history and that understanding of self, like, yo, a beat is way more than a beat, a drum is way more than a drum, you know. Rhythm is what all life operates on. Your whole life is a beat. You know, every time blood coursed through you was a beat. And how these things affect us, how they can heal us or harm us, you know, having profound knowledge of that, I associate with LA MCs who tend to be a little more in tune with the, we could say, like, shamanic aspects of hip hop. You know, what are we doing here? The way they bend the voice, and even more to me than the chop is the melody thing. I know a cat is from LA or the Bay when they're rhyming because they have wild melodies, like off rip. Then the chop, you know, the sense of rhythm for sure. But first is always, like, I don't really associate monotone flows that much with the West.
Right.
And you know, all of that, how it awakens the spirit, you know. In L.A., the rhymers, it's about getting you to move, you know. In the East Coast, it's more ponderous. You know, in New York, you're rapping, it's more ponderous. Cats are like, you know, the head nod. In L.A., cats are freaking, you know. It's a different thing. We were just playing there yesterday, and, like, I love playing L.A., man. It's a great city to rap in, and people are still rapping pretty seriously out there.
Yeah.
It's good to see.
So at some point you decided you needed to take your life back to Maine. You live in Biddleford, Maine?
I live in Biddleford, Maine for now. But yeah, I mean, it wasn't really like I needed to take my life back. It was just my trajectory wasn't what I thought it was. At the time I moved out here, I think, or out to LA, I was 22 or so. And I had, like, been signed, and things were going on in such a way where I was like, yo, I'm about to blow up. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be, like, I'm going to save underground rap. I'm going to be a millionaire. And I'm going to go to L.A. and go collect my bag with my crew. And then, you know, as things do, they go left and backwards. And I was just like, yo, I'm not ready to compromise my youth. You know, I'm 20. I'm in my 20s once. I don't want to be in the rat race. Mm. I don't want to be doing this shit. You know, I had a chance. I had a shot. I had some meetings. This shit didn't go how it should. I don't give a fuck. Okay. I'm the kind of dude who wants to live life. You know?
Yeah, that's very apparent.
And so, like, yeah, man, I just had to bounce. Like, yeah, you know, I can't live in no tenement yard. For real, man. L.A. will have you just in an apartment thinking in a small cube looking at famous people all day. I was like, that's not me. I need wilderness. I need to be able to enjoy my life fully. And, you know, I like to be outside a lot.
If you wouldn't mind putting me in the mindset of 22-year-old you, who would have, what career would have worked for you? Like, who did you want to be? Like, did you have someone you looked at and you're like, I want to be Andre 3000, or I want to be like, does anyone come to mind?
I think the first person I ever wanted to be in rap, it's funny, you said Three Stacks, is probably Three Stacks.
Okay.
When Love Below dropped, I remember begging my mom to give me a green plaid suit. Being like, yo, like, this is it. Like, we have the permission to be truly freaks. So maybe Andre. But no, not really. Not okay. In a serious way, no.
Would you say that the older and maybe just the previous generation of Project Blood Cats, like I'm thinking specifically of maybe AC Alone or someone, like,
yeah,
mentored you or like showed you things?
No. Okay. I mean, peace to AC, and if any of the cats from that era school me, it's Juke.
Okay.
You know, my boy Juke, that's, yeah, my man. Like, Jupiter and I are quite close from that school of MCs, and I, that's my man. And not to say the other cats aren't, but he just puts me onto a lot of game, and oftentimes, man, I'm like really I'm very anxious. You know, that's why I try to make calming shit, because I like to listen to shit that calms me down.
Okay.
I'm like manic, bro. And a lot of times I'll be like, man, I'm not killing it. And Jupe will be one of the OGs who'll be like, bro, calm down. You're totally killing it.
Okay.
Like, you know, like,
yeah,
breathe, kid.
The reason we find ourselves in this room today having this conversation is because of Self Jupiter. When Who Told You to Think came out, I was scanning the onlines and came across a rap record by someone, yeah, I'd never heard of. And I was like, he has a song with Self Jupiter? I'm going to listen.
Yo.
So it ended up becoming one of my favorite records of 2017. I talk about it on my podcast. I tell people about your music. Like, your music, fam, is important to me. And like, it's like in my role, in my little way of being like an information conduit, if you get into a conversation with me, especially if I have a couple of glasses of wine, we're gonna end up talking about Milo and why you need to be talking about, you know, listening to Milo and Rap Ferreira now.
Oh no, don't even sweat.
Just wanted to tell you that, since this might be my time to tell you
I
that.
I do appreciate,
yeah,
that.
For sure.
Shout out Self Jupiter.
To me, so the fact that this, I assumed you were a kid could, mm-hmm, go toe to toe with Self Jupiter says a lot.
Thanks,
right,
man.
It's like he's a master.
Thank you, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
I studied with the best. I'll say that I had unfettered access to the greatest rappers alive. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I've spent thousands of hours with Mike Eagle.
Yeah.
Thousands of hours with Bus Driver.
Yeah.
Thousands of hours with No Can Do. You know, been around these dudes a lot in rhyming scenarios, getting money with them off of our craft, seeing them come up with an idea in a car, and then watching people fucking clamor to retweet it and get hype off of it and make t-shirts of it,
mm-hmm,
and being like, whoa, that was just an idea this fool had off of a whiskey ginger, like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I do.
Whoa, we could do this shit. Like, this is what I want to be and do. And it kind of opened up my brain to, I guess, striving for something. So thank you for saying that.
Yeah,
about
absolutely
being a master and shit. That's ill, man. Thank you.
wanted to take a little pause and just thank Kenny Siegel for contributing beats to today's show. Kenny is one of Rory's closest collaborators, and we reached out, David Ma, the Dad Bod Rap Pod co-host and booking person extraordinaire, has the kind of relationship where he could send a text, and we just asked Kenny if he could send over some beats to help make this show special. So he sent over some things that are from some of his projects, some that Rory was involved with, some that weren't, and we're just really thankful that we're part of this artistic community where we can support each other. And so thank you very much, Kenny Siegel. Thank you very much, Dave. Wanted to give you guys a little pause in the action here. We're about to get into the rest of the interview, but just wanted to give credit where credit is due. Every sound you heard on today's interview and in and around it was produced by Kenny Siegel, former Dad Bod Rap Pod guest and extremely gifted producer. So let's get back to it. So let's talk about making records. Like, how do you decide when it's ready to be a project? Are you always building songs, or are you like, now I'm ready to make a record? Like, it's project based. Is it theme based? Does the art come first? Like, please tell me.
Yep, it's all of that. Basically, I go, I don't know who said this, but I was peeped to this concept in college that, look, farmers let the soil rest. You are no different. You gotta let the soil rest. And so I'm an artist who I'll let myself off the hook very easily.
Okay.
I'll take 2-4 months off and just play video games every day.
Okay.
I won't even think about a rap.
Yeah.
But when it's time to rhyme, I don't know, a spirit comes and I know, yo, I have a stack of vinyl, or yo, I'm starting to get this itchy feeling like I need to pick up the pen. I need to be in my notes app. I need to do whatever the fuck. I need to express myself. And then I kind of like zero in and I can't do anything else until the project is done. And that's how my shit gets made. Usually that process is pretty natural. Sometimes it's kicked in the high gear a little bit by need. You know, there's times where I just need money.
Yeah.
And I'm rapping, you know, because I got a baby coming or something. You
sure.
Know what I mean? Like, who told you to think I really made that record? Like, damn, I need some money.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a dope record, and it kind of blew my mind because it was the first time I ever did that where I was like, I'm gonna make a record because I need some money.
Yeah.
And I was like, that doesn't even sound bad to me.
do you know who No Name is?
Of course.
She only did, I've talked about this now several times on the podcast, I'm fascinated by this and how she's achieved her kind of stature within what we do. She only did one interview when her Room 25 was coming out, and in it she said a couple of things that really interested me, but the main thing was that the reason that she made that record was because she needed money.
Yeah.
She had run it, the first one, the name is escaping me right now, the pink one, had run its course. Mm-hmm. She had moved to L.A. She had a lifestyle she needed to maintain.
Telephone.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Which I love. I think it's a great record. And that I think it's okay to talk about. Like, I think that's fine. I go to work every day because I need money, too. If I could make it by rapping, trust me, I would. Like,
no, I know. A lot of people don't be real about that shit. Like, nobody's putting out all these songs because they're just moved to, you know, we need money.
And again, I have this kind of vision of you as this kind of ascetic person who's really all about art, and like it's not being crushed or anything here, but I think I do get the sense you would do it even if no one was listening.
I do it when no one's listening.
Okay, fair
but
enough.
There's definitely a time, you know, like if it was just rapping for me, I'd make mixtapes and they'd only be on cassette and that's where it would end.
Yeah.
But it's like, yo, if I put in a little extra effort, this might change my life.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'd do that. Like, you know, if I send, instead of mixing this shit myself stoned at 2 a.m., if I send this to Kenny Siegel and then I send that to Daddy Kev, that'd be a whole album. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Bing bong.
Yeah.
So.
Good enough.
The process, I mean, I have the best. I work with the illest musicians alive. Mm-hmm. Again, that I have a proximity to Kenny Siegel, who I think is like the illest hip hop producer working right now.
Yeah.
I believe that. Like, yeah. I don't. The sound is ill. It's unique. His dynamics are stupid. His mixing is stupid. His conception of this music is stupid. Like, I don't know, man. I'm not saying like producers have to be cool people or anything, but. You know, sometimes you'd be like, what is it your heart about? Do you love this thing? Kenny Siegel got bona fides. He loves this thing.
Yeah.
To work with him or Daddy Kev, you know, it's like, come yeah. on, man.
We did an hour on Hiding Places right before it dropped with Kenny, and it's one of my favorite interviews that we've done. And he was very self-effacing and very open about the technical side of things. Like, mm-hmm. we will get a little producer nerdy, mm-hmm. even though we're not gear nerds. I love asking people that because I feel like it opens up chambers for them. And it's like kind of like how I started with you. Why this machine? What does it get you? And he was the best interview at that I've had. And I actually find, no offense, producers are better interviews than rappers.
Yeah.
Especially we will traffic in kind of a golden age older gentleman who's had their times and it's passed and they're happy to talk to us, but they're really bitter and it's kind of a bummer. And sometimes we're sitting there staring at each other going like, we opened the door here and now here comes the venom. And it's really nice to talk to a vital artist in the prime of their career. Thanks, who's like, not bitter about the game, even though it didn't quite go the way you wanted it to. And so I do want to come back to that.
I'm grateful.
So what do you, you said nature and all that stuff, but you also have a store and a storefront and a studio at Soul Folks. Mm-hmm. And can you talk about like why you do it that way and what it means to you and like how you set that all up?
I do it that way because in Biddeford, Maine, 1200 square feet is $800 a month, you know, and I'm on Main Street and uh-huh. when I step outside of my store, I look right. And I see Wei Hung, which is my favorite Vietnamese restaurant on earth.
Nice.
It's right there. And then I look past that and I see Casco Bay. I see the ocean. And I smell salt in the air. I hear seagulls and shit.
Yeah.
One block down is this Superfly Cafe, Time and Tide. I think, man, to have a proximity to this shit anywhere else in America, unfortunately, my rap career cannot afford it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm totally. Just playing the game with what I have. If I had the means to be in the illest parts of the world doing this weird rap shit, I would, but the outskirts are mine, so I'm claiming them. You know, I'm trafficking in all the weird places from Milwaukee to Biddeford. I'm about to fucking move to Nashville. Like, I'm about to.
Are you
like,
really?
Yeah, I'm just like taking weird space. I want to like occupy all the places people are like, what the fuck are you doing here?
Nice.
Hi. I'm pulling up like, and clown car, Ruby, everybody hopping out. We just like, what's up?
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, I have a couple things I want to cover, but since you use the term Rubaiyat, it's like a play on words of the Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam.
Yep.
Okay. Just
and my granny is Ruby Underwood.
Okay.
So
couple stacked meanings there.
Yeah, I'm really like sentimental and I believe in like a lot of things, but like energy. And when I was approached, Kev approached me after Hellfire Club and was like, dude, you're the kind of artist who really shouldn't even be waiting for a label to figure out your sound because they never will. Like, no label is going to really be like, yeah, we get it. You know, you're going to be waiting forever. You should do your label. And I was like, damn, okay, let me think about that. What would I call it? And I just wanted it to have, you know, I don't have the answers. I need guidance. You know, I really need guidance. And I need it to be something that I can never fuck around with Rubaiyat. That's my grandma's name. You know what I mean? Like, I needed it to be a thing where it was like, yo, I will never, you'll never see us pimping Rubaiyat shit out, dog.
Right.
Like, we will never do that. We are not about that in any way. And so it just gives it this energy. And like, man, we just played Chicago. My boy Eldon, he with me, he's my DJ. We played Chicago. I brought him to my grandfather's house. And it was ill because he was telling him like about Rubaiyat. One of the things he said, he's like, you know, Why your crew's name that? And he's talking about my grandma. It was so ill, man.
That's great.
I loved it. Yeah. Blessings.
So you mentioned the guys from Hellfire a little bit. Who do you consider to be your peers? And maybe setting them aside, like who else?
Oh, my peers? Okay, not the cats in Rubia?
Yeah. Okay. Oh, well, maybe them too. We haven't touched on them, really.
Okay.
Yeah. Who are your peers as MCs?
Those are my peers. The cats and Ruby are the only peers I have as MCs. Elucid, Eldon Summers, SB The More, Pink Naval, Sal. Those are the people I consider my peers in this MCing thing.
Okay. My plan worked, and you mentioned Elucid. I would love to talk about Nostrum Grocers, which is an incredible record. And if I'm hearing this correctly, was it recorded around the same time as Budding Ornithologists, or was it like
Sovereign Nose? I did them both the same weekend.
Oh,
in New York,
weekend?
One weekend. I had to go down. I did the days at my boy Dove's mornings, and then I did the nights at Willie Green's with Elucid.
Holy shit! Okay, I want to lay this out for the people who are less familiar with your music. Just give me a second to catch them up. So, you have a group. Or an album? Is it an ongoing concern?
It's a crew. Okay, it was a crew before the album.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. So it's Milo, a.k.a. Rap Ferreira, and Elucid, who's also part of Arm & Hammer.
Big Chief and Bad.
Yeah, a great solo career as well. One of the best MCs in the world right now. And that's Nostrum Grocers. And then Scallops Hotel is, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, an alias of yours or a collective?
It's an alias.
It's an alias.
And a place.
And that state of mind. That record is called Sovereign Knows of Your Arrogant Face.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, and that's maybe you can tell me, is your music is pretty free, like your stuff you released as Milo is fairly left field, it's fairly niche, it's very poetic, dense, and Scallops Hotel is a step maybe to the left, like it's weirder.
The thing with the Milo shit is that it's anchored. You know what I mean? That description you just gave, we know what Milo shit is, right?
Right.
And there's times where, oftentimes, I don't rap like that. And I started to really develop an anxiety about, what about when I'm not rapping like that?
Okay.
They're going to hate when I'm not rapping like that.
Okay.
So I just started to filter myself and put stuff that was just not really like that under Scallops Hotel.
Okay.
Because I was like, I don't know what this shit is. It's some silly shit, but it's me. And then it got really serious, and it was like, maybe this is more me than the Milo shit is. And it forced me to think about my art in this really different way, and I'm so thankful that before I even put out an LP as Milo, I started doing Scallops Hotel, because, again, this dual way of thinking, I started to pace my releases different. Every mm-hmm. Milo drop, there's a Scallops Hotel drop.
Okay.
And that just pace started naturally occurring, where I'd be like responding within myself. I'd make one record and be like, oh, this is Scallops all day, and it's way doper than any Milo shit I made. And then a month later, I'd be like, oh, now I'm on this Milo shit. That's going to fuck the whole game up. Blah, blah, blah. And it would be like, yo, this is really weird to monitor in myself. Like, what is going on?
Right.
And it kind of came to a head with Budding Ornithologist, where I was like, yo, I've mastered both styles, and you know what? That's who I really am.
Okay.
I'm an artist.
Like, yeah.
My name is Rory Allen Philip Ferreira. I'm a rapper. I've done this for my whole adult life. I want to put my real name on it, and I want to own everything I've made. And that's kind of the maneuver in the rap forever. Excellent. Which, thank you for saying it.
Oh, yeah, for sure, man. I will address you in whatever manner you wish to be addressed.
Oh, no, man, my name is Rory. It's all peace. Okay. But it was cool to hear it rap forever. That just sounds dope.
The phrase, I don't know if it's from Twitter or whatever, that rap forever will rap forever. Like, yeah. That's going to be bouncing around in my head for years. Like, that's amazing.
Thank you.
And I'm just going to take this time, because it was on an Elucid thing. You have a thing you said that I think about all the time, and I've literally thought about putting on my business cards. You said, Dr. Octagonicologist apologist mm-hmm. with a personal policy of standoffishness. That's one of the illest rap lines I've ever heard. Like, and that whole video where you and Elucid are driving around what I believe to be the New England coast.
Yeah, it's bit of a pool.
Like, pulling over and like getting out of the car to rap. I'm just like, I fucking love this. This is fucking amazing. This speaks to me. Like, this is the shit I like.
Thank you, man.
Yeah, dude. I love that line so much. Like, It's really deeply meaningful to me. So.
You already know, we out here with loving Cool Keith
into the
2020s and onward.
And like. Onward, absolutely. So if you would, please, if you don't mind, can you tell me a little bit about Elucid? Like, why him? What's the group? Like, what is Nostrum Grocers?
All right, so until I was 13, I was an only child.
Okay.
So my conception of self is very just like, it's me. You know what I'm saying? I mean, Mike Eagle has mentored me for real in rap. And definitely, I guess I should have said Mike Eagle earlier when you're like, have you had a mentor? Mike mentored me. He brought me on my first tours. He taught me how to do rapping as a business, how to make this money, how to snare him.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but I did phrase the question the way I did because he said AC Alone did that for him. So it's okay, all circular.
Yeah, it is all circular. But yeah, Mike did that for me. Mike brought me in the game. Okay. You know what I mean? But Elucid was the first MC I met where I was like, this fool my big bro, man. Like, I've never really had a big bro in my life until I met Elucid. And I was like, man, this is really my brother, you know? Like, he's been at my mama's house, like, you know what I mean? Our kids played together and shit. Like, this is my dude. And it just, I don't know. We had an immediate understanding. I met him maybe my very first time in New York City. We played a show together. And then the second time, third time we played together. And, like, we would just be building outside or in the green room or whatever. And I'd just be like, dude, like, it was fucking with us. We saw how they would write about him and we saw how they would write about me. And we would be like, yo, the rap game will have you think we're different. We're like the exact, we're family, literally.
Right, right, right.
And that realization is the genesis of Nostrum Grocers. Just okay. Being like, yo, this is the experience of blackness in America is a continue. Like, we're the same shit. Like, people hear Elucid shit and they hear my shit and, you know, whatever. They might not think it goes, but that's family. And, like, that immediately gave me, I don't know, a courage, you know, to, again, I think if I am not the best rapper alive, if Mike Eagle is not the best rapper alive, Elucid is the best rapper alive. That's how I feel.
Yeah.
That's my trinity.
Yeah.
Elucid, to me, has the lineage to this, like, he's from the actual place. You know what I mean? He's East New York. He's, you know, and, like, man, you see him rhyme and you're like, dude, he has all the qualities. Like, the spirit is so with this man when he's on the mic. And I don't know, because of that proximity to the place, I think he might have a claim at best MC that, you know, if you want to be a real staunch person like me, you know, you're from New York, I'm like, you the best MC. Like, well, he is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. And that's your guy. so this is a little bit inside baseball kind of critic stuff.
Yeah, that's tight.
But Woods had a breakout year, right?
Like, oh, Woods is snapping.
Yeah, and he's, for me, Hiding Places salute is the best man. Record of the year.
Salute that man. It is the best record of the year.
Terror Management is also an incredible record, and it's different enough to create a very interesting paradigm. Like, it's like, they're singing on this record.
Mm-hmm.
It has a pretty picture on the cover. Like, what's going on here? It's like, mm-hmm. it got all of, I'm going to say us, as like the kind of people thinking about hip-hop and trying to like publicize this strain of underground hip-hop. But it's also in Time Magazine. Yeah. Hiding Places was in Time Magazine. I didn't know Time Magazine still existed until they covered Billy Woods.
Right.
So he's more relevant than them at this point. But he's having kind of a critical little darling kind of moment, and I'm really happy for him. And I think he's very deserving. I wonder if perhaps Elucid can have that moment. Like, can he kind of like, what, I don't know what's next for him. Maybe you know more about it than me, and I don't want you to speak on someone else's business, but I would really love to see him also kind of catapult into that critical.
Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of stuff is like backroom baseball shit, man. Like, motherfuckers have lives. You know, Woods has a life that's like perfect for an MC.
Okay.
You know, and not to say that having like a fam and shit ain't perfect for an MC, but it's like, yo, you got a baby? Fool got a baby? You probably going to be, you know. My man's putting up numbers. He's doing it hard. He's doing a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
With a little boy and, you know, a wife and things. Like, I don't know. That's not easy. That's all.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he got shit, hella shit coming. And I think next year, 2020, is really lined up well for Elucid.
That's great.
Like, man went to the UK twice in 1 year. Snapping, boy. He got shows with Mike Eagle coming up. I think the first week of November, they're doing the Midwest.
Yeah.
I've seen Minneapolis, Chicago, Milwaukee. Maybe. I don't know. But, yeah, I don't know. I think it's a good time for what we're doing. I look around and I see all the guys who, The only reason I didn't say those twos as my peers is because I would never want to be disrespectful. You know, I look up to Billy Woods. I look up to Lucid. I look up to Mike Eagle. Those are all dudes who were in the game before me. I would never even presume to be like, I'm their peer. I'm on their level. You know what I mean? Like, sure. I'm still like, yeah. Damn, y'all snapping, man. You know, hey, bro, I'm going to catch up, man. I'm going to catch up to y'all one day, bro. So it's just cool to see them knocking it out the park.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's an exciting time for music. I have a lot of, so I'm almost 40, and part of the kind of thesis of our show is, yeah, we're older cats and we've lived through different phases of hip hop, but, we're not classicists.
Yeah.
We think some of the most exciting, and I'll keep using the term vital, hip hop ever made is being made right now.
Right now.
And by people in this room.
Thank you.
So it's important to shine that light and to, in some ways, kind of refract it through a lens of classicism. It's like, if you like De La Soul, you should listen to Milo or whatever.
Oh, def. I mean, it's a family tree, you know, it's a hierarchy. I think anyone who makes this rap shit, art rap shit, whatever, if they had a trouble claiming a lineage to De La that wasn't just like on some humility shit, but was like, nah, I don't think I nothing I do is even like De La. It'd be like, man, just quit playing. You know what I mean? Quit playing.
Yeah.
We all know where this stuff comes from, and we're all furthering it and developing it. You know, obviously ragtime is not the same as modal.
Right.
You know, but still, like, wouldn't be no modal without ragtime.
Right. Yeah. That's very, very well said. Let's talk about budding ornithologists are weary of tired analogies, which is, I think you could admit, a weird title for a rap album.
I came up with it when I was 15.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, that was, okay, so I was going to name my very first mixtape, Budding Ornithologists Are Weary of Tired Analogies. I was 15, I was like, this is perfect.
Title. Yeah.
Everyone's going to know, I'm the fucking nerdiest rapper alive, off rip. Like, you're going to pick this up, oh, I know what this shit's about, but I don't know. And I was so into that. I was 15, I was like, how cool is that? I don't want you to know what I'm about.
Right.
And the time came, and one of my brethren, my boy, passed, Rob. And so I switched the plan up, and that kind of changed my trajectory, man. And it affected me to think about that. When I look back at the Milo years and being like, man, this thing started with a tragedy. And so I knew I wanted to stop making music as Milo. And I was like, I want to close this in a way that makes me feel at peace. And so I was like, well, I'll make the record that I think I would have made, which of course is not what it is. But I just want to honor my initial self. You know, I thought that name was the shit. When I even named this album, I was like, this is crazy.
Yeah.
But fuck it. Who cares? I don't have a boss. I don't have a label that's going to say no.
Right.
When I sent that shit to the distributor, they were like, cool record, man. Whatever, let's go. You know what I mean? Like, there's no one to tell me that shit's weird.
Yeah.
And even that, it's like, I should flex that a little bit.
Yeah.
You know? So I did. I know that record's crazy.
I'm here for it. It's
thanks,
great.
Bro.
Yeah. I don't know if this like matters to you or not. It's my bike riding album.
Okay.
I like to have one earbud in with that and like be aware of my space. But
that's
like
tight.
I love riding my bike and listening to that album.
That's
something I do often.
It's definitely a record that benefits motion.
Yeah, totally.
Thank
And I feel like it is referential to hip hop in a way that some of your other projects are referential to, like, the world of your interests and your the information that you take in. I feel like there's little phrases that you turn that are taken from like kind of older hip hop, and
mm-hmm.
even like, is it John Witherspoon?
Yeah.
Comedy routine kind of thing where he's doing what goes up must come down.
That like, rhyme.
Yeah, it's so great. So anyway,
that's what rapping was.
Yeah, exactly.
Like rapping was some shit you do to goof off.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. Anyway, again, not a question. I'm just telling you what I think about your records.
That,
but
gee,
it's my podcast. I'll do whatever I want.
Yes, you will. We flexing.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about, you have a show tonight at Bottom of the Hill in a couple of hours in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
What can people expect from a Rap Ferreira show right now?
Rap Ferreira show right now. I'm on my grown man shit. I got a DJ. I'm rapping, but I'm not juking and jumping. My shirt stay on. You know? I'm like big boy now.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm trying to be agile. I want agility of mind. I want us to like all kind of group hallucinate together. That's what I've been trying to induce. The DJ dynamic is so ill. I've never rapped and had a DJ. So just that, I was like, let's just do that. What would that be like? That'd be so fun. And it has been. That dynamic is clear. You know, like the triangle is the most powerful shape found in nature. Like the MC DJ, it's like that. It's like, duh. Like, that's just, you know, of course it's got nitrous, son. Like it just, oh, it's so good. And saying that as someone who I come from, like, having me and my sampler and my boy and his sampler and the other homie sampler and everybody's, like, making the beat on stage and shit, and we're all, like, isn't that ill? And that's ill, but, like, low-key, I got back problems from years of doing that shit. Like, leaning low over tables. Yeah, man. So this is a great method.
What? Sorry, I lost it. What was I going to say? Do you freestyle? Like, oh, you freestyle as part of a show?
Yeah, I freestyle every show.
Okay.
Some shows, it's like, oh, let's do a freestyle joint, and it would be like a rhyme, a whole rhyme. Some shows, it's like freestyle, silly shit. Mac and cheese. Yeah, last night, a macaroni song. sometimes, and most of the time, I freestyle just as a tool because, you know, I'm fighting some demons, you know what I'm saying? So, like, shows are kind of difficult right now. So I'll just be on stage, me and these ailments, and I'll fucking forget what I was even rapping about.
Sure.
And, you know, you pay to see a show, so it's like, you got to keep it going, you know, keep it flowing. And thankfully, the beats are good. My mind is pretty quick, so I'll freestyle if I fuck up a rhyme. And what's cool about Rap for Air shit is no one's heard these songs anyway.
Gotcha.
So I'll be like, oh, I totally fucked up and freestyle, and no one knows.
Right.
They're just like, we loved it.
Yeah. Is this the end of the run? Are you going up to Pacific Northwest, or like where you? What's next?
We're flying out to Minneapolis after this.
Okay,
and then yeah, I'm gonna go off the grid a little while. I'm gonna go down Tennessee and, you know, check out some farms and things like that. And then I got like two records I'm finishing up in LA. Before we go to Minneapolis, we're going back to LA to finish up a couple records. I mastered one 2 days ago with Kev called Bob's Son.
Okay.
All self-produced.
My dad's name is Bob as well.
Shout out. Yeah. Yo, shout out everybody. Bob's Son. I'm with the real Bob's Son right now. Yo, this record for you, bro. I didn't even know that. That's so tight. So yeah, I'm calling this shit Bob's Son. And it's funny, though, you'll hear it. The first track is like a, I don't ever do this neither, like an intro. I guess I did on Too Much Life Is Move, but like an intro track.
Yeah.
And I got Pink Navel just like, do Bob's Son. You are listening to Bob's Son. It sounds so fun. So that's about Bob Kaufman and what I think of the poetic thrust of modern, you know, hip hop is, I guess, what the duty is, what we should be doing, what's the work now, you know, in this post Lil Yachty world. You know, how do we make hip hop that anyone would want to listen to?
Mm-hmm.
That is meaningful, you know? It's not even serious anymore. We can't do that shit no more. But right. Can we even be meaningful and make this stuff anymore? Would you listen to that?
Right.
Have you already been, you know, set up in such a way where, you know, cats and out, they, I don't know, they just make you feel like a fucking loser because you've spent time writing 16 bars down. So I've been trying to figure out how to hack that. And so I think Bob's Son is the answer. And then and then after that, I've got this album that's been a long time coming with my boys, the Jefferson Park Boys.
Okay.
Mike Parvizi, Aaron Carmack, Kenny Siegel, myself, like 21, 23 songs.
Wow.
Triumphant return to the big rap stage.
We'll nice. Say.
We coming to fuck rap up with that one. You know, if you liked Flies, if you like So the Flies Don't Come.
Yeah.
This is that shit grown up. We came back and just said, you know what, let's turn this party out. I love this album. I think I might call that one Hypnosis.
Okay. I'm so glad you brought up the poetry thing because that is what you and I initially talked about online.
Mm-hmm.
During our vocab episode, we mentioned your music as being extremely poetic, and someone we're mutually affiliated with sent you the show.
Yep.
And said you should listen to this, and yep. I'm very Shout thankful that you did. And you reached out, and like it totally just made my day that day. I was just like, oh y'all my god, I can't believe day. That worked. I'm gonna do that more often.
It hella worked, because like y'all were saying something that I thought only I thought.
Okay.
And I was like, of course I think that, I'm a shithead, I'm mean. But then I heard y'all total strangers be like, yo, this fool got a big buff vocab, he could be on that list.
Yeah.
And I was like, damn, they think so too. And now I'm just like, man, what's up, motherfucker? Throw me on there.
Yeah, totally. I'll work the angles. we're getting to about an hour. I want to be respectful of your time, and we're kind of arriving at the end here. But since I have a chance to ask you, and I've been meaning to ask you this since then, is your music poetry?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I don't think that's exclusive to my music.
No, not at all. But I think there are a lot of rappers who don't consider their music to be poetry, and mm-hmm. would almost be offended in kind of the way you were just mm-hmm. hinting at, that they'll like there's a anti-intellectualism or a kind of like a mm-hmm. anti-rigorousness in hip hop. And mm-hmm. I actually attribute it to Jay-Z popularizing the like not writing shit down.
No, it's not Jay-Z's fault at all. No, you can't blame Jay-Z. It's like, low-key, it's like Jeff Weiss's fault. What do you mean? I'm serious. It's like rap writers who like write hella long articles about rap, but then be like, man, I hate company flow or something. You know, and you'd be like, dude, you analyze rap all day, but like not the shit that begs to be analyzed all day because you're scared of these big rap brains. But now I'm on a tangent.
That's okay. He's a friend of the program and someone I greatly admire, but I'm happy Jay-Z. To talk about this.
Well, I'm just using him as an example. He's sure. my straw man. Yeah. I know, Jeff. That's, you know,
yeah.
it's all good.
For sure.
That's my I donated to Passion Wise.
Yeah,
exactly. Hey, when the site went down, that's facts. Pull up the receipts. You see how many other rappers donated Passion Wise.
Yeah.
Big ass goose egg. I'm the one rapper who did that. I earned my ride. I might talk some
that's
shit.
That's awesome. So let's just, again, kind of briefly, like, talk about poetry. Like, what role does it play in your life? Like, do you go to used bookstores and buy old tomes? Like, what's, like, are you working in a tradition? Like, is it something that's important to you?
Yeah, I'm obsessed with poetry. Poetry is my life, and it's how I'm living my life and how I'm raising my kid and how I'm engaging with my art form. And it guides everything I do. My understanding of life is informed by poetry, definitely.
Would you recommend our listeners a book of poetry? Like, if someone loves hip-hop but doesn't know that much about like what it might be taught in college's poetry.
You should read Solitudes Crowded with Loneliness by Bob Kaufman, or Cranial Guitar by Bob Kaufman.
Okay.
I mean, that's some real ill shit. That's some deep dive, but go into that. I don't know. I mean, the other thing, too, about poetry is so much of it is the very worst.
That's ever. The problem.
The very worst ever. Sometimes I'll be reading some poetry, and I'll just be like, damn, the whole time this has been whack.
Yeah.
I'll be like halfway through the book, and it'll just dawn on me, like, I haven't read a single. Sometimes I'll get like the heebie-jeebies, like, next song I write is going to suck because I read all this whack-ass poetry.
I just put all these terrible couplets in my mind.
Right? I'll be like, what the fuck is that going to do to me?
That's funny.
Mm-hmm.
My experience with poetry is somewhat limited. I had a really big Bukowski dirtbag phase in college.
Yeah.
And then I got into kind of like Baudelaire and Verlaine kind of stuff off of that, Celine, which is like prose, but really influenced Bukowski. So I felt like I needed to read it. And then that was kind of during the slam poetry days.
Yeah.
So I didn't vibe with that. I didn't think that was a good use of my time. I've seen some things that were really amazing at open mics and slams and things like that. But it's also like you were kind of just saying, it's the fucking worst.
Yeah.
So I think
it's some weird non-committal weirdo shit.
Yeah.
Like, just make a song.
Totally.
All right.
So I guess what I want to ask you is, like, is there a career path or a sideline? Is there like a Rory Ferreira college tour, kind of like a poetry book? Kind of like, no, it's all going to be in the hip-hop realm.
I like, again, it's about freedom for me, man, and that's what rap affords me. Rap lets me do whatever the fuck I want.
Yeah.
And it just gives me the money, and we have an agreement. We know how it goes down. Doing the college runs or the poetry books, there's rules to that shit.
Okay.
Those things are institutions. They traffic in not just money, but power, influence. People are made and broken in the marinas. You know what I mean? Like, rap is like No one takes me serious. I'm a fucking rapper. You know what I'm saying? That's I like that zone.
Okay.
I like to be the surprise sneak attack. When you're like a real poet, people be like, you know, make you go on TV, read a poem before the president speaks.
Right.
Who'd want to do that shit?
Right.
I wouldn't be caught dead doing that shit. You right. know what I'm saying? So yeah, even yeah, that, yeah. I'd be like, am I a poet? I don't know. Maybe I'm not, because I really, what the fuck? I'd be thinking, why would any poet do that?
Right.
Weird.
Yeah. There's one thing I do want to touch on, and I believe you, I listened to Who Told You to Think on the way here, and I believe in the very first song you referenced Bukowski and Mike Ladd mm-hmm. within a couple of lines of each other, and I had a time where I was obsessed with Mike Ladd, and I feel like I might need to talk to him soon or just track him down, because he's someone who was really important to me in my college days, and like someone who's, I think, again, contributions are perhaps being swept under the rug a little bit. I think he got pretty thematic with like that Infesticons kind of stuff, but like before that, when he was just doing Mike Ladd and like Ozone Records, and he had a live record, and he had their hip hop songs, but they're as poetic as it got for that time. Can you talk a little bit about his music and like
Mike Ladd is the only other rapper I've ever heard who I was like, this dude and me make the exact same stuff.
Okay. Yeah. Where I'm not I the only like, one who thinks that, huh?
No, the exact same shit. When I heard Mike Ladd, I was like, whoa. So there is one other person who gets it. And it's dope is he's actually on that Jefferson Park Boys record I told you about.
Okay.
Yeah, I got him on that joint. And I actually got him on, and I sold out of him. I don't have none to give y'all right now. I feel very bad about that. The Hoodwinker tape I made.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
He's on that joint rapping, too.
Okay, cool.
He's rapping more than, I mean, I'm not going to say more than ever, but, man, he's rapping a lot, actually. Okay. And super accessible. I could give you his email or whatever.
Right on. Yeah, maybe we can
talk about that. Dude, he's out in, like, Paris and shit.
Is that true?
Yeah, man, he's out in France killing the game. He's like an OG, man. Like, Mike Ladd lives, like, a fly life.
That's
like, he plays shows with, like, VJ Ayer and, like, does, like, grand art lord poetics. Like, he's not trifling with the fucking rap game.
That's so great to hear.
Right? No,
I'm glad I brought it up.
You already know, because, yeah, sometimes you'd be like, what happened? What's that cat doing? It'd be very sad answers. But, no, Mike is chilling. And yeah, I got him on a couple projects coming up.
That's fantastic to hear. But I'm his, glad that there's going to be a literal connection.
Oh, Def. Well, it's funny. That song, what is that joint? Reanimist. I think might have been the first time I shouted him out on a rhyme. And that song made its way back to him.
Okay.
And that was like our intro. He hit me up from that and was like, yo, he came to a show in Philly and we got to like really kick it. And yeah, man, I wish that rappers knew how important they were and how needed they are. And I wish that we could be more organized a little bit, how some other like occupations are, you know, like doctors conference.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish that we as rappers did more, even just if we did on the underground tip, you know, like I'd be missing these cats and how their brains work. And there's ideas I want to talk with them before a record comes out. I might think like, man, what would have you know, M. Saeed thought about this or some shit, you know what I mean? Like, what would a cat like that think about a rhyme like this? And I feel like, I don't know, we could affect culture in an iller way, not just such a commodity sort of zone that we're in now. But I don't know, I'm stoned thinking about dumb shit.
It's not dumb at all. It's great. And I'm actually going to let that be the last thing.
But
really, really want to thank you. This has been like exceeded my expectations, and I just couldn't be more fascinated with you or your music. So to get to do this is really special for me. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Very much. Shout out to the Dad Bod Life. Pot bellies on deck. We in here. Yo, it's my honor to be on this podcast. I've been talking about it all week. I've been telling everybody. I even told my son. I'm going to be on podcast, man. So thank you very much.
Absolutely. All right. Dad Bod Rap Pod. Peace.
One.
That's the show for this week, everybody. This was a really great experience for me in a variety of ways, and I've got some people I need to thank for helping make it happen. Thank you, David Ma. Thank you, Damone Carter. Thank you, Hip Hop Is Alive FM. Sorry, I don't know your real name. I will figure that out soon. Thank you, Jeremy Castillo, for letting us use your awesome studio in San Francisco. Thank you, Rory, for your time and your intelligence and your honesty. And thank you, Eldon. Eldon is Rory's DJ.
And as we were kind of packing up, he actually gave me a book of Bob Kaufman's poems. And I was really touched by the gesture. And I felt like an appropriate way to end this week's show would be to read one of those poems. This is called Battle Report. 1,000 saxophones infiltrate the city, each with a man inside, hidden in ordinary cases labeled fragile. A fleet of trumpets drops their hooks, inside at the outside. 10 waves of trombones approach the city under blue cover of late autumn's neoclassical clouds. 500 bassmen, all string feet tall, beating it to back to the bass. 100 drummers, each a stick in each hand, the delicate rumble of pianos moving in. The secret agent, an innocent bystander, drops a note in the whale box. 5 generals gathered in the gallery, blowing plans. At last, the secret code is flashed. Now is the time. Now is the time. Attack, the sound of jazz. The city falls.
Oh, fuck. Okay. Can you run it back?